Welcome to Silent Achievers, stories beyond the limelight. I'm Adam, your host. In this podcast, we dive into the untold stories of those who prioritize impact over attention. Join us as we celebrate the unsung heroes, the architects of progress, and the quiet innovators shaping our world with deeds, not declarations. Get ready for inspiring narratives that often escape the mainstream spotlight. This is where passion, dedication, and innovation take center stage. Welcome to Silent Achievers. Welcome to Silent Achievers. Today with Adam Bolvek, videographer and photographer with a passion for visual storytelling, with a background in radio, television, and digital communication. Welcome, Adam. How are you today?
I'm good. It's been a long day at work already, but it's a beautiful out day. It's a beautiful day outside, so I'm excited for the weather change too. So.
Oh yeah, I agree. Weather is awesome today. Can you please share a bit about your journey in the world of video production and photography from your early days to where you are right now?
Yeah. I don't know if it's unique to me specifically, but a lot of people I've met, this is something that they've just wanted to do and they've loved it. And it's just, that's how I felt as I got more into it, was this is just what I want to do, which feels like a burden sometimes, where it's like, why can't I just have this other job over here? But When I went to college, my first semester, I was actually scheduled as a criminal justice major. I watched CSI and all those, and I love science. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to do that. And I didn't even get any of my core classes. I think it was my first semester I switched to, they called it mass communications with television production. And the reason was I realized how much I loved doing this stuff and said, well, if I'm paying for school myself and I have to go in and do this degree, I should just do what I love. And that's kind of where the whole thing of like being pulled into this from the very beginning started. And so I switched and never looked back. And it was that time where I realized I had always had a camera in my hand, whether it was a photo camera developing film, you know, at whatever store. You know, I look back at old home videos and I was, you know, 3 feet tall. You know, can I try looking at my dad holding his camera? Can I try, you know? And I don't know how much it costs, but it probably wasn't cheap. But in fifth grade, my dad let me use his video camera and take it to school to film my friends at school. I mean, I don't know that I would let my daughter do that with the camera nowadays, but yeah, so I just realized that I had always had a passion for it. And so I said, all right, I'm going to follow it. And so, you know, after school, it took me about 4 years to break into the industry. That's probably because I moved away from, I'm originally from Maryland and I went to school in Baltimore, and I moved away down to Florida with my now wife. And, you know, it's a small school down in Florida. No one knows it. None of my teachers have connections down there, right? You lose the benefits of some of the school stuff. And it took me about 4 years to try to find someone who would let me work for them with basically just school experience. And it was actually not until we moved to Rhode Island, I got a post-production job there. And I said, hey, I'll do it for free. Can I add it to my resume? You teach me some stuff. And he was like, yeah, sure. And so with that, you know, I did that for about 6 months or so. That led me to, you know, opening doors for other spots. And then it just kind of snowballs from there. But yeah, that's kind of where I started. And now I'm working for a corporate job, but I've done agency work. I've done corporate stuff. I've done a little bit of freelance here and there. But yeah, this year marks 10 years professionally getting paid for it, you know, as a professional. So yeah, it's been a crazy journey.
That's awesome. And I'm glad that you mentioned criminal justice. Do you feel like is there any connection between like criminal justice and mass communication, mass media kind of? Do you see there any connection maybe?
I think the only through point that I see is the people, right? It's something that I didn't notice until halfway through my career, you know, my current career, that I really enjoy interacting with people. And so obviously with, you know, the criminal justice side of it, I would have been dealing with people nonstop, but likewise on the video production and photography side, you know, that's most of my job is interacting with people, some way, some form. And I think that's probably the biggest connection between them all, and learning how to communicate with people, because, you know, on both sides of it, probably criminal justice more than, hopefully more than the video production side, you're having more serious conversations that you may not want to have, difficult conversations. And so learning how to communicate people and an idea to somebody that may not understand what happened or how something has to happen, you know, those are common things probably between the two of them.
I can imagine that each customer is really different, and each video they want like something different, you know, each photography needs to be different. So how do you approach this like unique dynamics kind of between you as a creative person and maybe customer that can have their own ideas of the content?
You know, the way I've always approached, you know, first off, most of my career, I've been in a place where I'm not usually the person dealing directly with a client, but I do interact with the client. And I, at this point, after having so much experience, I'd prefer to be in the room with the client when the conversation is being had, because sometimes those people in that room don't know, they don't have the knowledge on video production or photography to speak to some of the things, and they might promise something that doesn't make sense or isn't realistic. So it's good to be in the room. But with that being said, I've kind of approached it similar to just any other relationship that I've had, whether it's like, you know, a colleague or a friend or even a family member. I try to be the best version of myself and try to stay honest and transparent with whatever I'm talking to them about. And I've always said, you know, when I go on set, I hope that I leave being I don't have a better word for it, but I hope that I leave and I was the nicest person on set that day, like essentially, right? Like I just want to represent myself in a way that can be genuine. And I've told people, you know, if I can meet you and I can meet a client and I can meet somebody who might end up being my best friend and I can show them who I am, what I offer, you know, if it's a business thing, and then they can take it and translate it through their lens, then that's all I can ask, right? And so, you know, there's differences between business and personal, right? But that is kind of where I start, because I'd like to think that most clients and just people in general want a human interaction, and they'd probably prefer something a little bit more human and less like uptight and professional, so to speak, as you know, you would traditionally say, than something that feels kind of transactional and you know, uptight. So, you know, before I broke into the industry, I was working in retail for years. That's like the first job I had. And it just was retail, 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 you know, and you always hear, oh, the customer's always right. And that sentiment has carried over to video production and photography a lot, where when you're working with agencies, the client's always right, whatever they want, but that's not really true. And so you have to learn how to navigate each client and what they're asking for. And hopefully you can suggest the right thing for them, even if they don't know that's what's right. And also protect yourself and your, you know, employees if you're at that level.
Yeah. With photos, you know, and short video clips, you don't have the advantage of hours of like, as they have in film, or hundreds of pages in the book, you know, describing all the narrative. How do you approach storytelling with one photo, one single photo, or with a 30-second, maybe 1-minute video clip?
You know, that is, it's something that you don't have the time to tell the bigger story, you know, but TV and film and long form things, do it the same way, right? If you take one scene out of your favorite TV show or movie, chances are they are telling a story with that one scene or one angle that they're showing. And I think over the years, you know, I personally love that side of it. I know some guys, they just want to make it look pretty. They just want to make it look cool. They want to make this light feel dramatic or whatever. And sometimes they do it an accident, you know, we call it a happy accident, right? You did it because you wanted it to look cool, but you know, oh, it's like, oh, well, maybe that could also signify this thing. And you lucked into it. But I really enjoy the thought process behind that. And I think, you know, I would call myself a student of the craft, right? I'm always trying to learn. And I think a lot of us who, you know, again, obsess about something like this and being good at it, we watch a lot of film and TV. And, you know, I don't have ad blockers on my, you know, my web browser. I don't watch them all, but I do watch them because that's what I do. So It makes sense that I should watch the things that are out there that other people are doing, especially bigger companies too. But you can tell a story by using subconscious, you know, things that we don't think about when it's a single picture or a frame, right? How does somebody look? How does the light look? You know, what are they holding? Where are they at? What is the surrounding? You know, there's all these things that you could probably go way too deep. You know, you're like, man, I'm going into every little detail. And the client, you know, I would say the customer, so to speak, you know, the people watching the content that you want to sign up or buy or whatever, they probably don't even care or notice, right? But you can tag into some of those little subconscious pieces that they might not even be aware of. And you kind of just learn those over the years if you weren't taught them. And you start to play around with those with, again, going back to your question about how do you approach a client? I have always wanted to work for people who I can feel good about because I'm selling, I'm pushing things to people. I'm trying to sell something. I don't want it to be something that's going to hurt somebody or be in a nefarious way. So, you know, the same way with trying to tell a story or trying to make a 1 minute video, I don't want to use a tactic that might be, you know, kind of shady or, you know, oh, you know, you could get away with this, but you know, there's plenty of stuff out there like that. So, just trying to tell that story by, how it would make me feel if I saw it or somebody similar and try to think about who's looking at it and how they might perceive it, you know, mm-hmm. the best you can, because you can't be inside of everyone's head, but you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Here I might see like, you know, connection with criminal justice as you like detective, you know, you see the broader picture, but you are also detail oriented individual, you know, and you kind of nitpicking all the details, which is really cool, I feel like. And from the like psychology perspective, and sometimes you also have to understand, I guess, all the biases out there and kind of building up of these like biases, right?
Oh yeah, it's a funny game, right? Just like the details that are subconscious that maybe people get. I think sometimes people get too, what I would say, artsy and like too into the craft, where it's like, oh man, like you, it's like, come on, no one cares about that. You just want to do it because you want to do it, and if that works, then that's fine, right? Trying not to do something just for the sake of it, but doing it with a cause behind it. And that gets tricky when it comes to biases, right? Because we're all, you know, again, in the marketing side of it, we're very aware of a lot of these things. And so then sometimes you start to try to push something to counter a bias. Mm-hmm. But now is that making you buy, you know, it's like now you're getting tricky where you're trying to push this thing because you're like, well, you know, too many people do this thing, or we don't see enough of these, you know, types of actors or something like that. And now you start to try to like help balance that out. But now you have to think, am I going too far in this direction? You know, it's a weird game that you can get really weird with. And again, whenever it's come to me, I always just try to, again, try to do the fair and right thing and say, you know what, like, what is the audience who would resonate with this product or this service? You know, usually people would connect with something that they can relate to. So then I would simply say, okay, can this audience relate to these people doing this thing in this way? And if so, then there should be nothing wrong with using that approach. You know, and obviously there's caveats to that, but you know, that's usually where I would start. Mm-hmm. Or it's like, hey, all I have access to is these people at this location, and that's what I got to do. So, you know, Sometimes that's the case too.
Yeah, I can imagine sometimes it's even hard to get feedback from people. So how do you measure that your video or your photo was effective, you know?
That's one I'm still trying to answer, you know. Trying to figure out if what I had created and my contribution to the content that was created had anything to do with its success or failure is really hard. Because one, how early was I brought into the process to brainstorm? And then you also have to figure out, like, was the concept the problem, or was it the initiation of the concept and how you actually pulled it off? You know, think about, like, was it the concept, or did you just do a crappy job at filming it, or, you know, whatever? There's no real good answer to that, right? A lot of times they go off of metrics. You know, we did something for my current employer, and we're looking at the numbers and tracking how many people watched it. And based on how many people watched this ad, how many of those people clicked to the website to sign up. It's not perfect. And I would imagine there's a lot of people that maybe did go and it wasn't a perfect thing to track. But does that mean I did a bad job? Not necessarily, right? Because it's something we've never tried. And luckily where I'm at, they're very open to, hey, this isn't a failure. We're just learning something new, right? Because again, marketing is trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work for your specific product, service, and audience. And so luckily they're very open to, hey, you know, one guy says, well, these aren't the numbers that we really wanted. But somebody above him says, yeah, but we've never done it. And I'm okay with those numbers for this being our first time. Let's figure out if we can get those up. And then I look at it and say, those might not be the best numbers because of the way we put the ad out there. Is there a different platform we can put the ad on that it would perform way different, right? Because again, I told them, you're asking somebody to see an ad, which most people don't want to watch. They look at their phone immediately. If they do watch it, they're seeing a company they've probably never heard of before. And they have to remember the name. They have to remember what you offer. And now they have to then go to the website to look at it more and sign up. You're asking a lot of that person for one time of seeing this ad. So those numbers make sense. But what if you take it to a platform where they're already on a device that they would go to the website? So that's one step less. And they're already on a page that they're used to seeing stuff like this. You know, it's not a traditional TV ad. So, you know, there's lots of different concepts, you know, ways to approach it that I think you have to consider. And it's not just like a one size fits all.
Yeah, I think it's amazing to think about how it's important really to think about the whole setting, you know, not just about a photo or video, but also where the customer or whoever sees it. You know, they can see it in museum and it has different effect than when they see it on TV or on Facebook, let's say.
Yep.
So it's really important to understand the broader picture and to really put yourself in the customer's shoes, you know, and think about it.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I probably gave you a long-winded answer about how I track my success, and it the long answer was, you know, it's really hard to, and mm-hmm. there's no great answer. So the way I look at it is, did I deliver what was asked of me? You know, did the concept match what it was supposed to be? Did the was the quality the best that I could bring with the budget that I had? Things like that. And those are kind of almost intangible. They're more of an opinion base of, mm-hmm. hey, how does everyone feel like this part of it went? You know, but yeah, and that's where when you get to a bigger company too, if you've ever been to a company where they're like, hey, everyone gets a bonus if we hit our numbers, and it's like, well, only these people here, you know, this small sales group is the one out there selling, you know, and then maybe these people have a small influence, but like everyone benefits from it, you know, but you know, that's kind of how you're being judged by the overall picture. So, you know, yeah. It seems to be, yeah. I guess, as fair as it can be.
Yeah. And you now kind of answered a little bit this question, but you already talked about, you know, working in a team. So how do you lead and inspire your team to bring a creative vision to life, let's say?
That's a good question. I have found, you know, right currently, my current role, I'm the only one on the creative team doing the content. In the past, I've kind of led a team of up to four or five people. But on set, I've hired freelancers and stuff, and I've covered and kind of managed and directed and been kind of the head of us on set for maybe 10, 12, 15 people. And I think you have to understand when you get to, when you're in a creative position and you're trying to lead a team, most likely they don't have the pressures that you do on you at the top of the team, right? Because people are above you and they're telling you what they need and what they want. And now you're being judged based on what is delivered from you and the team that you're helping get there. Because they don't have those pressures, most likely they're not going to have the same passion that you might, right? Hopefully they have a very similar passion and they all just really want to just knock it out of the park. But it's often that they are not going to have the same drive that you do because they don't have the same pressures as you. And it's not fair for you as a leader to put your pressures back on them either, right? You find what pressures they, I guess should fairly be met with, right? Delivering an edit on time or showing up on set on time and, you know, understanding the script and, you know, things like that, right? Like, hey, if you're in this position, these are the things that I expect you to do. I don't expect you to, you know, feel the same thing that I do from my management. Mm-hmm. I think understanding that will help bring your level of patience up mm-hmm. and your frustration down. And then, you know, just again, trying to, on set, I never, so I guess this is a side comment is, you know, getting into this, you think, oh, I'm going to go work in Hollywood or do some movies, or I'm going to go do, you know, these cool commercials that you see for Nike and all these companies. I got a very small taste of that. Not even like I barely, right? You know, some commercial stuff. And I've worked on some like short films and some feature length films with different crews. And I saw that the bigger the project got, the more you became a number on set, right? It's just like this thing, you show up, you got one job, you got to do this thing. And the more that people, they just took it too seriously. They were too serious about it. Like, get the job, be passionate, you know, do a good job, but also don't be so blah and like, you know, not that I would say stuck up about it, but it's just, it wasn't a fun environment to be around. Mm-hmm. And so I realized early on, I didn't want to do that. Right. And that's partially why I don't freelance. And I never wanted to freelance the way some of the people I know here in Charlotte do. That, and I also kind of wanted a more consistent paycheck. That's the other downside to freelancing. But really it was like, I don't like being on bigger sets that have these weird attitudes. And so for me, managing a creative team and trying to get the most out of them, the first thing when I'm on set, especially, is bring good energy, have fun, be professional in the sense of like, hey, we're here to get this thing done. And hope that you trust these creative people to do what they were hired to do, and show them that you trust them. And usually that's a good start. And then, you know, if you're in an office, right, trying to get a photographer to work on things, an editor, look, the creative field, it's very subjective, right? Like, you can't give feedback on something that you think is better, right? You have to have a reason behind your feedback. And so that's another thing. Like, if you want a creative person to perform better, try to give feedback that makes sense to them, especially if you're coming from a place that you don't have a creative background. Don't speak to creative, speak to like the messaging, the client, the, you know, things like that, that you can talk about. And so I tried always to give feedback, that I could justify, you know, hey, I don't know, you may have tried this in the edit. I don't know if this is a timing thing or if it's, you know, whatever, but have you tried this because it's feeling a certain way, you know, whatever. And but more than, I don't like this part. Can you try to figure that out and change that? Like, that doesn't help anyone. And I was on the receiving end of that plenty of times where somebody just told me, hey, the color of this is, like, that's not the right color. Can you tweak that color? I mean, I tried to match. I have the physical thing right here. It just doesn't, that looks like it to my eye, but you know, and they just kept getting frustrated. I said, well, do you want to just send me what you think is the right color? Cause you're telling me, you know, is so, yeah, I think being more specific and having a justifiable, you know, critique is helpful on the back end of a creative's process.
Yeah. I can really see how it can get really frustrating, you know, that client wants you to edit something that maybe not be even possible in a way. So it can get really stressful. And this is my next question, kind of about how do you prevent burnout, you know, because when you are creative, sometimes you just feel empty in a way, you know. I can imagine that some, like, there is one week you just feel, okay, I don't have any creative idea maybe. So how do you approach this kind of vacuum of creativity?
I will say that, you know, when I was working with agencies, I was in a position where I had no say in how the final product ended up, other than my creative take on certain edits and things like that. But besides that, you're kind of tied to the story or the vision that was already created beyond that. And you have to realize early on that you can just find little tiny places to try to insert your creativity, right? If you want to insert your creativity to the level where you're not frustrated, that's where you're going to have to create your own work. And that's why so many of the guys that I know do their own short films. They save up and spend thousands of dollars to create a feature film. They, you know, because they have the full creative freedom to do it there, they've realized that in this pocket of, you know, creative jobs, right? You can only be as creative as you're allowed. And sometimes it's not much. And so you just try to find little tiny spots where you can be creative, right? You know, how you transition from a shot, or, you know, maybe you switch orders of, you know, the order of something. You know, in photos, I try to get kind of fun with, again, maybe I tried to light it slightly different in this way, but it still makes sense for the end. And that's kind of what you have to do to stay sane, and just know that there's going to be times where a client says, hey, can you try to, you know, do this or do that? And you say, well, you know, it doesn't make sense, you know, because if they do this, then this is not going to make sense here. And, you know, I tried this thing with what you asked earlier, and they said, well, just go ahead and do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You have to realize too, like, even if I was the guy who came up with the concept and pitched the idea, I literally just told a guy this story. You pitch this idea that you're like, wow, that's really cool. And then you give it to somebody else. It's no longer yours. Right. And I've heard people that write films and, you know, it's hard. It's your baby, so to speak, and you've handed it off and they may just ruin it completely, but you have to know that, like, well, the initial idea was cool, but, you know, they tried, you know, and that's kind of how you have to approach some of those too, which is not always easy.
Mm-hmm. Are there any tools or trends to follow, maybe web pages, maybe some influencers you would recommend to people to follow when they are starting their video and photo editing journey?
I would say this, if somebody was looking to get into photography or video production, I say videography, right? Because in videography, you have to do pretty much everything. Usually is you're filming it, you're editing it, you're doing color, you're doing sound and all that, right? You don't have the privilege. If you're freelancing, you know, you find a niche usually, and you're like, I'm a camera operator. I'm a first AC. I'm going to pull focus. I want to be a direct, you know, I want to be a gaffer and just deal with, you know, electric. That's one thing. I would say if you're trying to get into the creative field, and you are trying to find resources to be inspired or learn, I think you should find people that talk more about the idea behind what they're doing, the why of what they're doing, and not the, this is what I used, this is how I did it. It is saturated, especially on YouTube. The filmmaking and photography market on YouTube is saturated with people who say, you know, look at this setup. I'll show you how to do it. I use these lights. I use this camera. Oh, here's a review of this camera lens. And here's a review of this audio recorder. And younger guys and girls get obsessed with that, and they, you know, it's easy. It's shiny. You know, it's the shiny thing, right? The new toy that I can buy, and maybe that will help. It's very similar to me. I kind of regretted going to school and not learning more about like color theory and design and all of that stuff, right? It's stuff that I have to kind of pick up because I've been around it enough. And I kind of, you know, if you saw something, you kind of get an idea of what feels right and what doesn't. But I'm not a designer, and I'm not a color, you know, those are just things that I can kind of pull out of it. So I would say find people that help teach you the theory behind things and the concepts behind them, not so much exactly how to do it. And there are guys who are out there that show you like, oh, this is how I lit this, or this is, you know, how you create this 3D animation. But don't just copy exactly what I did. Use the concept behind it to do the next thing. Or if you're in a project and you say, oh, I ran into this issue, but this guy did something over here, and that might actually solve this problem. That's what some people try to do. And so that's what I would tell people to look out for. The one that comes off the top of my head is Sean Tucker. He's on YouTube, and he's on Instagram. But he really does a good job of telling a story it's more than just I'm shooting a photo. He tells, you know, the meaning behind it. You know, one of his was how negativity can kill creativity, right? Like things like that, right? Those are things that I think the younger people coming up trying to get into it, that will help them, I think, more than here's this camera, here's this button, here are these settings that you need to follow. You know, that stuff feels easy enough to learn. Mm-hmm. There's another guy on YouTube. His name is Aiden. I don't know his last name. I'll have to send it to you. He's based here in North Carolina. I think he's out in the mountains, and he tells the most amazing stories on YouTube. Visually beautiful, but he plans these stories out around a topic. He studies it. He does all his research, and it is just a wonderful, I mean, you just get lost into this little story of his about whatever topic he decides to tell you. And there's not many people that I had found doing that, where it's nothing about the art. It's nothing about the concepts, not how behind the scenes. It's just him creating something that maybe somebody else would say, wow, he did amazing. I think I could do that. I want to do that too. And then just be inspired by that alone.
Awesome. Thank you very much for sharing your story, sharing your ideas behind the photography and videography. I appreciate it. Have a great day, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. I appreciate your time as well. Thanks for having me on.